Spoiled.
That's it. So yeah, that's fine. Audacity recovered, so we're recording again.
Okay.
Colin, I'm not going to sing.
Okay. Now, what prizes do we have left to give away as we approach the final hours? So far, I think we've got another coffee machine.
How many have we given away? We've
given away one coffee machine, one Mini Cooper, one phone, one tablet, one plate.
Right. We've got a phone and a coffee machine remaining.
Okay. So in that case...
And a night with me.
We tried that. People stopped... they stopped donating.
Did they? Oh, okay.
Oh. You can try your best, Paul, to give yourself away, but...
I bet JD from the Wilderness would have a night with me.
Yeah, but he wouldn't pay your airfare.
So... I could Skype.
Okay, so if you want Paul to woo you over Skype for the night...
Here's but... a quick preview. A woo! A woo!
Oh, dear. Okay, so I tell you what. Let's open this up for some quick fire donations. Whoever donates the most in the next 10 minutes... Whoever donates the most in the next 10 minutes will get... Choose the prize, Paul.
We'll get a phone.
Okay, you'll get a Polaroid smartphone.
That's it.
So, get donating. We want your money anyway. And we'll make sure that we get your prize to you as well. And remember, guys, whoever donates the most by the time that the clock chimes 8, you'll win a brand new iPad.
A new iPad.
A new iPad.
Yeah. Why did they have to call it the new iPad?
Oh, no. What was wrong with iPad 3? Yeah.
Well, it's Apple, isn't it? They've got to be different.
That's the thing. Because when I'm trying to tell people, oh, we're giving away a new iPad. Why, was you going to give away a second-hand one? No, the new iPad. Yeah, I know it's new.
Yeah, all right, Mark asked.
Yeah, it's like, honestly.
If somebody would be kind enough. £8.03. Please donate £8.03. Oh, it's change. Oh, don't worry.
Okay. So, what I would say as well, at the moment, if you do want to be in for a running with the new iPad, the bids from our auction for the Star Trek London tickets do not count towards that. However, the same person, James Roberts, who won one of our tickets, is currently the highest donator with a single donation of £200. So,
may I ask, what have you got for these Star Trek London tickets?
We got £150 per ticket.
That's superb. Absolutely brilliant. I think we've just had a donation of £30.
That's pretty good going. Pretty good going if we have... And
yes, we have.
That's wonderful.
We're over the target for the Skaboo. We're at 101% now.
101%. 25 donations for Special Care Baby and 11 for Amnesty.
Yeah,
but it's all fantastic.
Yeah, no, this is going absolutely fantastic, guys. We can't thank you enough. And also remember that if you do donate over £200. If you want that brand new iPad, donate £201 and you will get it.
Can I throw something out there, Wayne and Mark?
You can throw whatever you want out there. I'll try and catch.
Yeah. I know this is going to late, isn't it? It's 8 o'clock. We finish. Yeah.
Yes.
So our target is £1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Could I put out there? If we were by 8 o'clock this evening to get to £1,700, could I take half an hour extra of your time and do a live Brace for Impact? if we were to get to £1,700, I would go into my kitchen, I would pick up 2 bottles of my homemade shots, and I will take suggestions from the audience, and I will do it live, ad lib, and off the cuff.
You can talk for as long as you want, mate.
Yeah, that's because we're currently on £1,250. If we can get to £1,700, I will do that. I think that would be a great one-off. And, okay, you know, if we've still got 26 listeners or something, that's only £15 each or £20 each, and we could do that.
Yeah. It's definitely yes, doable.
It's 4.5-hour podathon.
I totally agree. It's totally doable. So, now that we are all set, and now that people can hear us, and the audio seems okay, how about we add a friend of ours and do an episode review?
Not Barney, is it?
No, this is Colin from Trek News Views.
Oh, I spoke to Colin earlier. We had a really enjoyable chat. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, unfortunately I wasn't around for that one, but I will be listening back to it in its entirety once it goes up. Hiya, Cole.
You caught me off guard there because I was in the chat room.
Hi, Colin, you're right.
All right. Hang on, let me turn this off, otherwise you're going to get echo.
Echo.
Right, there you go. See, yes, okay. I didn't know you was going to do that, and I'm chatting away in the chat room. Oh, God, my scob's going off.
Don't worry, we like to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, definitely doing that.
How you been keeping?
I've been all right. I've been in between this morning and now. I've been doing other stuff for other related items, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But jumping in and out to keep an eye on you guys, and the fact that you're so close to your target now, and the fact that you've done 20 hours is incredible.
Yeah, no. Well, we're actually on 22 at the moment, so we're nearly there. We're on the home stretch.
22 hours, 13 minutes, and 38 seconds, according to my Mixlr app.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
I've only had 3 weeks.
And these two weaklings did go to bed for a little while. I haven't slept a wink.
Wait, I can remember being at school, and you went for 3 days without sleep. That's going to school, then coming back from school and going to work. Going to school, coming back from school, going to work. And you stayed up all the time. You are some sort of cyborg sent from the future to distribute Trek to the nation.
Yes, definitely.
I take it you've all got tomorrow off.
No.
No?
Luckily, I have. It's my 4-day weekend. Why do you think it was scheduled this way?
I've actually got to start work early tomorrow. I've got to start work at 7 a.m, but I am working from home tomorrow, so...
Well, I'm not. I've got to be there at 6:30, but I have had more sleep than everybody, so it kind of pans out.
We did try and look after you.
Yeah.
I know.
I'll probably be in bed by about 9 o'clock, I should think.
If I stayed up for as long as Wayne, I'd be a very, very grumpy Klingon at the moment.
Well, the thing is, Paul, we try and do a regular pod, and you fall asleep. So how is we meant to keep you awake for 24 hours?
You could have sent an Orion slave girl over.
Honestly, I think we would have been tight. So,
what if you do one on if you get one at Star Trek London, Paul, it's all yours.
Get one what?
An Orion slave girl.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If you're just wandering around the floor and you're seeing Orion slave girl, she's all yours.
Don't even need to ask. Yeah. Just assume.
Just assume. Just go on and say hi. I'm Paul, I'm Trekmate, and you're mine.
You'll be in there.
If she doesn't slap me, does that mean I win?
That's it, yeah, yeah.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Just take a leash.
It looks like I'll be kipping in Adam and Paul's bath in the hotel room then.
I was actually going to say it sounds like Paul's going to be kipping in a local Nick. But
there's an idea. I get the room to myself.
Yeah, no, exactly. You'll have all the room to sleep like a starfish that you want.
Excellent.
Okay, then, that 10 minutes is done. So, that was for the phone, wasn't it?
That was for the phone.
That was for the phone. That goes to our family member, Sina Alvarado.
Oh, well done, Sina. Thank you ever so much.
Yeah, she's put in two donations, and one of them was on the Amnesty International page. So, thank you so much, Sina. You've bagged yourself the Polaroid smartphone, so thank you so much. We know you guys don't give money just for the prizes, but we like to try and reward you.
It's nice for us to be able to give something back to our listeners.
Yes.
Exactly. So, I better note that down, as otherwise I'm going to forget who's won what.
Oh, and I tell you what, I've managed to wangle it. If you just let me know where everything is, I can get free postage and packaging on everything.
Wonderful. Saves me a few quid.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get work to do it.
Excellent, mate.
I've got a reliable secretary.
It's like that. It's
always handy.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
I just got to say, before we go into it, because Kelly from Technologic asked me to do this, so I've got to do this, otherwise she'll never forgive me. I've got to talk Texan. So I'm just warning you.
Yeah, okay. I'm prepared. Holding on to the seat. I've heard it before.
Yeah. So this is for Kerry from Technologic, who asked me to do it. So, hi, y'all. How y'all doing? I'm just calling from England, and I just want to say I love your little old podcast, and I think your guys are real cool, the way you're raising all this money for little old hospital and that thing, what you call it, that charity that looks after people in prisons. It's so sweet. My little old family down here in our redneck county, we come up from the cow shed. We come up especially to listen to you guys in England and help you raise your little old money for your little old podcast and make all these people real happy. I think it's right pretty.
Oh, I appreciate that. I hope you've brought rat burgers.
Oh, yeah.
You guys in an episode of Family Guy or something. I really like that.
Colin, before we kick off as well, I know that you're a fan. What was your thoughts on improvised Star Trek?
Oh, my God.
Brilliant. Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, so I thought you talked to Paul.
No, Colin.
I thought it was brilliant. The guys are absolutely brilliant. Star Trek. And anyone who doesn't listen to the podcast, you really need to listen to it because it is such a funny podcast. And it translates. Sometimes American humour doesn't translate to England and vice versa, but they totally nail it, completely nail it, and it's just, it's the funniest Star Trek P-take out there, but it's all done in good faith, and it's all done very much tongue-in-cheek, and it was, I really loved it. I had it on in the background while I was doing notes, and every time them guys are on, just, you can't help but laugh.
Honestly. Booty
yeah.
comms.
Yeah, when me and Wayne did our little thing to publicise this a couple of weeks ago, as soon as we mentioned improvised Star Trek, that was like a 15-20 minute conversation.
Yes, it really was, because I've been listening to them for a while now. As soon as I found them, I tweeted about it, and you was like, oh, they're great. So, and I think now that you guys have listened, I'm sure they've got a few of the collective going to be joining their fan base.
So, follow them on Twitter.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, guys, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing a live real-time review, as we like to call them, on The Visitor.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful episode, and I'm probably going to cry, so I'm going to get myself prepared.
Go get yourself some tissues.
Get yourself some tissues. I was just going to say thanks for asking me to do this, because you mentioned it the other week on your podcast. And the fact that you probably both cry if you ever did it. So the fact that you've asked me to do this with you, I'm really chuffed and I'm really pleased.
Ah, you're more than welcome. More than welcome. We always love chatting with you.
There'll be nothing like for the listeners listening to four grown Englishmen blubbing on a podcast.
Hang on, who said I was going to cry?
Yeah. You've been drinking, Paul. You're bound to.
I need a wee.
Everyone knows when you've had a drink, people have a drink, they get emotional. It goes with the territory.
It's not true.
It is. How many drunk people go up to other people and go, I loved you, I do. I really love you. And you're thinking, yeah.
I do. Bug I must say, I do love you all.
There you go.
See, honestly, that's the thing. I've never been an aggressive drunk. I've always been a overly lovey-dovey drunk.
Wait, how long have I known you?
You've known me now for probably coming up 15 years.
Jeez.
I can't remember seeing you drunk. Once, maybe. Once, I think I've seen you drunk. Maybe go out.
Yeah, I tended to have quite a good metabolism for alcohol.
Yeah, me and you need to go out.
really, honestly, mate.
When the children are 8 or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, with a pregnant wife and a year and a half old child, I'm not going to be free for at least 5 years. So,
hey, let's look at it. Leanne won't be able to chase you.
Mate, honestly, it's not worth it.
It's not worth it, yeah. Take not it worth from me.
I'll do enough for both of them. I'll have one for you.
Oh, you do that, mate. You do that. So, guys, if you want to get your copy of The Visitor ready, we're about
to
click play.
I'm ready to rumble.
Okay. As long as you're sure?
Yep.
Okay, then. So,
okay. Should we have a little countdown?
Hang on. You're doing a commentary. Commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, real time.
Crap. Hang on. Let me get my disc out.
Yeah. We swiped.
Never told me that.
We told you it was a real time review.
Oh, what season is it, Mark?
Which means we're reviewing it.
It's season 4.
Season 4.
All right, let me get before. Let me box
season
this.
4, episode 3.
Don't worry, Maris, we'll wait for you because we're waiting for Colin.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I did it on purpose because I knew Maris wasn't ready.
What a gent.
Yeah, got to look after the ladies. Jeez, good job I'm in the same room as my box sits, that's all I can say.
Still, that's the thing. I suppose it can sometimes confuse people because we nicked the catchphrase from the Wilderness Guys. It's no longer commentaries, it's real-time reviews.
Yeah. That's what I thought when it's like a review. I thought, oh, that's a discussion then. If you'd have put commentary, I'd have had it ready.
Yeah. It was far more entertaining.
Where are you starting from?
We're starting from zero.
Okay. No, because some people go, you know, fade to black, so and so on.
No, we start right from the beginning. So it's literally right. Just from the opening.
Sorry about this, folks. I'm normally more organised. Honest.
he says that.
More than 20 seconds.
Right. Is my rest ready? Because I am.
I'm ready. Are you ready, Paul?
I'm ever ready. I'm like the rabbit.
Okay, Maris is ready.
Okay. Maris is ready.
Okay, is everyone ready? I'll do the countdown. 3, 2, 1, go.
Fantastic. Raining.
I love this episode so much.
It is a real powerful episode.
That's a beautiful picture of them too.
It really is.
Do you know when I first saw this off the baseball. That statue was significant? Because I went down on the statue. But it's not, it's just a statue. So
you read too much into it.
No, because it comes down on the statue, doesn't it? Then it moves across the picture and then goes across to the baseball and back up to his chest. And I'm thinking, well, I've showed you everything on that table means something. So,
you were searching for ages for the hidden meaning, yeah?
Yeah, I thought it was like a Bajoran statue or something.
Right.
It's nice.
At the beginning of this episode, when you first saw it, who did everybody think that guy was?
Well, no, you didn't know. I didn't have a clue because obviously you saw Cisco's baseball. Yeah. So you assume some sort of... but then you know that's not Cisco. And I'll tell you what, they done Tony Todd's old makeup quite well.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can do it really wrong.
Is this Tony Todd?
Yes.
It is.
Candyman.
Plays Kern, of course, as well.
You wouldn't know, Paul. Candyman wasn't the type of film that you would enjoy.
It's one of those that you'd pin me to the seat and make me watch with my eyes peeled open, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, because you are a wimp.
Yes, I am.
Oh, no, it was hysterical. Me and my best mate done that to him when we was at school. And we got him to watch The Exorcist, which is probably the lamest film going. But he sat there crying. It was brilliant.
I didn't cry. Did I?
You did have a couple of tears.
I'm sensitive.
Good, because this is a very emotional episode.
It is.
that this girl's Andy Robinson's daughter.
In real life, yeah.
Yeah.
She actually auditioned for the role of Ezra.
Really?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing her spots.
Yes. Yeah, but she auditioned for the role of Ezra, and obviously she never got it. So, all them people who don't like Ezra, this could have been the alternative one.
That's the thing. He's at this point just gone off to fix a brew.
As you do.
Nice cup of tea. You'll sort everything, won't it?
And yeah. Do you know what I like? Despite this being so far in the future, his living room is not the stereotypical 24th century living room.
No, he hasn't got... Well, no, I mean, by this point, this is probably mid-25th century, isn't it, at least?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, he hasn't got replicators everywhere.
Generations. Mm-hmm. When Picard went to look at Kirk's cabin in the mountains was very basic.
Yeah. Mm.
So I suppose when you're surrounded by technology, when you're at home, you want to get away from it.
The only thing is, with this one, she just asked him, why did you stop writing? But am I right in saying he stopped writing when he was 18 years old?
No.
He was a little older than that.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, no, because at this point, was he just a journalist, or had he started writing his novels by this point?
She's come to seem to get inspiration off of Madden's show.
Yeah, she'd read his book, and she said she'd read it twice over in a single night. And she wants to be a writer, so she's come to see him to get inspiration.
No,
and
I meant in season four.
Oh, right.
Not this particular episode.
Oh, sorry.
He's pretty much at the end of the days here.
Yeah. Season four is a journalist.
Yeah. I'm quite confused. He stopped writing because of an incident when he was 18, not when he was 18.
Mm-hmm. No. What Wayne means is, if you think during the Dominion War, Paul, and he was a reporter, not a writer. Yeah.
He was not an author. He was a journalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's obviously he wrote the book after the Dominion War.
Yeah.
I tell you what, just the emotion.
What do you think of the opening credits, by the way? Sinister run.
Well, I just saw a tear roll down his cheek that just betrays all the emotion I think you were just saying.
Yeah, the emotion in his face just then. I love these. This is probably my favourite opening credits.
Yeah. I think so.
One, no.
Yeah, I think they probably are as well. I think they're probably my favourites. Visually. Sorry, go on, Paul.
I was just going to say, I've always enjoyed Deep Space Nine's opening, but I've got so many memories of being really, really young and sitting in the living room with my parents with an open fire going and the TV with the Next Gen intro going. I think the Next Gen intro is always going to have some special place.
Yeah, well, TNG's always going to be special to me as well.
Just because I can remember the fire crackling in the background and the... I think it's not the whole of the beginning. It's just the very, very beginning section, the first couple of seconds when the planets go by, and that start of the music. And I can remember my parents being there, and it's just a flashback of a memory, and it's really, really bizarre, and it's quite hard to explain. But
I know what you mean. It just reminds you of your childhood. Yeah,
yeah. I like the way they tweak the opening credits and all to reflect the movement of the wormhole and the movement of the space.
Yes, they had more ships going on, and you've got the little spacemen floating around with the equipment, etc.
Yeah.
It's nice the way they updated it.
They had the Defiant.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, I don't think there is any season's opening credits and music that doesn't gauge an emotional response from me, because I love all of them. I absolutely love Voyagers. Always gives me a tingle. And same with Next Gen, and even TOS, even though I wasn't into it as a youngster.
There's always that little bit of emotion, isn't there?
Yeah.
Now, I've never noticed this. Matt Warwick's just put on the forum that he loves Spock's face in the tail of the asteroid. I've never noticed that, and I'm going to have to look out for that.
Yes, apparently it is there. I've never been able to spot it. It's a bit like one of those magic eye pictures. I've never been able to see it.
That's got to be bollocks. I'm calling shenanigans.
That's probably what?
I have heard it is there, but I've never been able to see it, but I always assumed it was just one of those people.
Yeah. It's like that internet rumour that got started that the Millennium Falcon was in the battle in First Contact.
It just someone photoshopped it in.
Yeah, and well, loads of people went and
you can see it circled on screenshots, but it's so tiny it just looks like a little blob, and it's like, that doesn't look like the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, because
they said, oh yeah, ILM put it in for a joke.
R2-D2 is definitely in the 2009 film.
Yeah, he's in the wreckage somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in the wreckage.
Yeah, he was.
R2-D2 was?
Yeah, in the wreckage.
In the wreckage ILM. Of what?
When they come out of warp around Vulcan, the Enterprise, and they're flying through the wreckage, on the left-hand side of the screen, I think it's about 2 minutes after they come out of warp, if you look on the left-hand side of the screen, you can see R2-D2 in the wreckage.
What episode is this?
In the 2009 movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Let's keep up.
Sorry, I was foruming and checking on the Thanksgiving page. Oh, no!
Speaking about this episode, I have to say, what I love is I have always loved the relationship between Jake and Ben, because this is probably one of the most realistic father-son relationships that we ever see in Star Trek.
Yeah, I like that in real life, though.
Him, telling how he feels. How long has he had that mole on his eye?
I don't know, mate. I'd never even noticed it until you said.
Nor had I. I've only just noticed it.
But that relationship exists in real life.
What, between the actors?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that really reflects on the on screen as well.
Yeah.
And
they're not related, are they?
No. But I guess they, you know, Jake would have grown up. Or Cyric Lofton would have, you know, grown up with Avery Brooks. You know, because he was quite a young kid. He was about what, 10 or 11 when DS9 started. So. Over the years, he would have, you know, become quite close, because, you know, there's a lot of work involved in, you know, making a series like this. They spend a lot of time together.
The rest wants to know where we are, because TV's blue screened.
Okay, I am at 9:51.
Yeah, more or less.
Okay,
closing rapidly on 10 minutes.
Yeah,
10 minutes.
Ten minutes now.
Yeah, Avery Brooks recently did a convention. I can't remember if it was Vegas or not, and he actually said at the convention that. One of the things that he gained from doing DS9 was to be lifelong friend with a really true, great person. And he brought Cyric out onto the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. And he just handed the mic to him, went and sat down, which I thought that's typical Avery Brooks.
Let someone else.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this. At the moment, the... whole engineering is going haywire. There's going to be a whole warp core breach, and Sisko is trying to save the Defiant
with a coat hanger.
With a coat hanger.
Yeah, space coat hanger, and there he's hit by a discharge from the warp core.
Which at that point he was handing a piece of equipment to Jake, who space also got zapped.
Yeah.
All right, man. It wasn't like a "I'm dead" gone. It was a phasing somewhere else gone, wasn't it?
I would pretty much safely assume that someone had just copped it if they vaporised in front of me.
In front of your eyes, yeah.
There's a vaporised, and then there's like the
no, there was no. That is not fucking quantum leap, Paul. Honestly,
what's the difference, Paul, between getting vaporised and getting vaporised? What's the difference?
You're just as dead either way.
Yeah.
Okay, another point in case of amazing emotion is this scene of
everyone is there.
Oh, O'Brien,
you can see the look on everyone's face.
Yeah. Morn!
Dax.
No, listen to the wilderness for once,
but,
Paul.
But the look... The look on Cyric Lofton's face. I mean, I didn't always like him. He's got tears in his eyes. I mean, he performs really well in this episode. I know he's, you know, most of it's played by Tony Todd, but he does give a very, very good performance here.
And the not overperforming.
the look on his face is...
Yeah. This is where they all show their acting chops, because crying on cue is very hard.
Oh, yeah.
Everything is very sad.
Yeah, I mean, like, the bit that's coming up now when Jadzia is stroking his head.
Mm-hmm.
That's such... I mean, it's a very, very short scene, but it's such a touching moment. Mm. And yeah, the look on her face, it just conveys so much.
It really does. And here we're seeing Jake at Quark's bar, and pretty much everyone's just trying to do the life goes on thing.
Yeah.
If you look at...
What I love is Quark never gives anything away for free, never does anything.
No.
And he's told Nog to take the afternoon off to spend it with Jake.
Yeah. So even Quark.
Yeah, he's touched.
That's amazing for Quark. You would not expect that.
No.
Not so.
Lady Trinbudna says thanks for doing
it. He's got gravity-defying headdresses on and all.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. What do you think it is? Velcro or just really tight metal?
I think it's Velcro.
Yeah, or some of that sticks like poo.
But it wouldn't be like a tight band, because the back of that head is basically soft for the makeup people. So if it was anything like a constrictive band, it would just crush the back of the head. So I reckon I stick a piece of Velcro on and then stick
Velcro or spirit glue or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, then. And what about in the Star Trek world?
In the Star Trek world, I reckon it was a bit like Morpheus out of the Matrix's glasses. When they just stick on his nose and they just stay there without anything going over the ears, they just stick around the back of their heads and don't go anywhere.
Okay, here we've just seen Sisko suddenly appear
and disappear. Obviously, he was in bed at the time, so you know, you would assume it was
a dream.
A dream, yeah.
I mean, even says it here to her that it felt so real, and Dax was like, "No, it was a dream." Basically.
Yeah, but it's one of them understandable responses.
Yeah.
That from such a loss, you, especially if you was in a half-sleep state.
You will get those visions. You will.
Yeah. And also, she's got like 8 lifetimes, so she knows that some people, when they're really upset and they lose a loved one, they want to see them so badly that the mind can play tricks.
Yeah, make it believe that they have seen them.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We've just had some more donations.
Oh, thank you. Oh, wrong mouse. Oh.
Wrong mouse. You don't hear that every day.
Well, I've got two laptops going. I've got one.
Yeah, I've got a desktop and a laptop, so I've got a mouse in each hand. I'm sat here. I've got my desk here, and I've got my laptop. So I've got the laptop on my left hand and my desktop on the right hand.
So
I've got one laptop on my
hand. I bet your computer's really hot, you know, if it's been going for 22 hours.
It's actually the processor. It's not hammering too much, even though I've got Mixlr going on. I've got virtual audio cable with 4 repeaters, and I've had Audacity running, recording pretty much since 8 p.m. last night. It's not actually too bad. It's held up very well.
That's a good computer.
And I have to say, Colin, we have you to thank, because from Kerry from Technologic and Rene Roberts both decided that your Texan accent was worth putting another 15 quid in the kitty between them.
Oh, well done.
So,
Worf's looking a bit... I don't like that uniform of Worf. He looks a bit... I don't know. It doesn't look like it fits him properly. It might be because I watched First Contact earlier.
Probably, yeah. You can remember in First Contact, him and Patrick Stewart were in the volleyball team at Paramount. So there was a bit more beefy.
Yeah.
So, and yes, folks, that was Patrick Stewart's real body in First Contact.
Yeah, he'd been to the gym, hadn't he? He wanted a bit more action in this movie, and he'd been down the gym and you know, bulked himself up a little bit so he could wander around in his vest.
Did you read a story about that, Mark?
I've read a few stories about Michael Dorn.
Really?
Yeah, he asked Michael Dorn to help him train, because Michael Dorn at the time was into like weight training and fitness and all that. Like.
He's a massive guy, isn't he?
Yeah. And he went to the Paramount gym with Michael Dorn, and Michael Dorn nearly killed him.
Today is a good day to die.
Yeah. So they had to change the training regime, and then they built it up slowly.
And he did it well.
Yes. Also, we could climb around on tubes with his muscles bristling.
Yes, he could. Yeah, he was rolling. Yeah. Climbing up on those things.
I tell you what, if after seeing him the other night on Who Do You Think You Are, if I look anywhere near that good when I get to his age, I'll be a happy man.
Oh, he does look. He does look good for that age, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, how old is he? He's 70...
71, 72.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, around that.
Yeah.
Jeez. They think they're doing a new Star Trek series. Very quickly, back to the episode, just before Sisko's just turned up again, there was a really interesting scene within him and Kira, and the lighting on it was really good. There was no full lighting, it was just shadows and light, and I thought it was really nice.
Yeah, the director of this is really nailing it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this time Sisko's actually stuck around long enough.
We've got JD from the wilderness on. It's about 4 a.m.
Yeah, and he said he can't sleep. He wakes up. He said earlier when he logged on, he said, I'm vocal.
Yeah. Hey, J-Dizzle.
Yeah, it's about 3:40 a.m. there, I think.
I hope he caught my wilderness quotes.
He did. But at least now on the episode, they know that Sisko is actually there.
Yeah, they know he's alive.
They might just tie an anchor to him to keep him there.
Come up with a techie explanation for trying to hold him.
Yeah. The other thing I like about this episode, I don't know which jumping ahead, so I think I like about this episode is, obviously, Sisko's not going to age because he's trapped in like a time pocket. Mm. But I do love the way that every time he comes back, he makes a reference to Jake getting older. And it's a nice continuity thing that they are, like, he's not just coming back and going, you know, Jake's not the same age and stuff like that. He realises from watching Jake go older that, you know, the time span's increasing. Here he goes.
So I'm just engrossed in that, the look on his face.
Yeah. There's some just all-round brilliant acting in this episode.
I know, whether it's seeing how Jadzia and Kira react to Jake, and now how Cyric Lofton is portraying this, just the pain that's in his eyes.
It really is pain. It doesn't look like it's an act or anything. It's just sheer loss. Oh, it's making me want to cry.
So this bit annoyed, because obviously these two would have filmed this bit all on their own. And, you know, he conveys the emotion brilliantly on all that latex and everything. And he brilliantly conveys the emotion. And it blends in so seamlessly between him telling the story and going back to young Jake. Mm-hmm. It's just, the editing on this is unbelievable.
Mm. Oh, it's so well put together.
Yeah. I mean, these two are acting with just each other. They're just, what's going on in their heads is they're imagining, because, you know, they might have filmed this before. I don't know if they filmed it. They could have filmed these two before and then filmed the other scenes afterwards. So these two are just putting it all together in their head.
Oh, they would never have seen any performances.
No.
They're on a different lot recording their own thing and just told this is what's happening.
Yeah, and then they would have filmed the other bits later or even beforehand, and they've got to try and, you know, act and try and put it together.
It's just brilliant. This is what Star Trek does. It has some brilliant actors in it, and they just to pull something like, it's like in Rafa Khan, Ricardo Montalban and William Shatner were never filmed together at all.
Never stood next to each other in number two.
I'm just going to go and get a tissue.
Have fun.
Okay. Yeah, they never. I mean, Ricardo Montalban talked to someone who read Shatner's lines, and Shatner talked to someone who read Ricardo's lines. It was, you know.
Because that's the thing, they only ever saw each other over the view screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they only actually, Ricardo Montalban, I remember seeing an interview, and the first time he actually seen William Shatner was at the premiere.
Incredible. Incredible they never actually even met.
Yeah.
No, surely, though, they have just from Spacey.
No, I'm on about Rafa Khan.
Oh, yeah. Never met in general, just
Yeah, Yeah, after they'd shot the movie. It's incredible that they were never there at the same time, you know. Didn't bump into each other at the canteen.
And his famous chest.
Was that chest real or was that rubber?
It was real. There's an interview. I don't know what box set you lot have got, but on the Blu-ray box set that I've got, which is the one with the hologram on the boxes out on the outside of the box, it's got the hologram of the ships. On there, there's an interview with Ricardo Montalban around the time Rafa Khan came out, and the woman asked him, "Was that your chest?" And he went, "Yes, would you like me to prove it?" And she says, "No, that won't be necessary." So, yes, it definitely was his chest.
Do you reckon he'd been down the gym as well then?
Oh, God,
he was pretty buff, wasn't he?
Yeah. A lot of people don't realise that his crew were Chippendales.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing
I suppose that makes sense. That makes sense, actually, because they were all pretty buff and chunky, weren't they?
The only person of Khan's crew that was a genuine actor was Joachim. The rest of the men were Chippendales, and the woman, they were from the female version of the Chippendales, because the director wanted these, you know, basically perfect.
Super fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, super fit, superhuman people. Yeah, because they didn't have a lot to do in the background, did they? Only Joachim was there.
So, all the other blokes, Chippendales. That's what they never spoke.
Oh, wow, Dog still looks really young there.
He looks really small as well, doesn't he?
The thing is, though...
Yeah. He does, yeah.
No, Tony Todd's a big guy, though, isn't he? He's got to be 6'4", 6'5", and he's quite a chunky bloke as well. I mean, he is a big guy.
He's brilliant as a Klingon.
The thing is, with Nog, they didn't actually... I've heard interviews that they didn't actually 100%... think it through, because Nog was never ever going to be a recurring character when he first appeared in The Emissary. No. So they hired the gent who plays him, who who's just a really short bloke, suffers with some sort of dwarfism, I would have thought. Since obviously he was playing a child, he was meant to grow up, but he won't go get no taller. So everyone just forgot that he was meant to be getting taller.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the Ferengi are quite small.
Anyway,
because
the Ferengi are small.
Yeah, but he's even small for a Ferengi. He's half of Rom's size.
Mm. Yeah, he's just a short bloke. He's just a short bloke.
Yeah, it's like Gary Oldman in Different Strokes.
Yeah, exactly. And he got, he got put in such a box where he couldn't even get enough work to justify it. Well, Gary Oldman's just a really sad case. His parents fucked him over, ended up doing security, and he's dead now.
Yeah, and had a fighting over his TV rights.
Yeah, no, exactly. He was screwed over left and centre. Cheers, Paul.
Yeah, Paul's back.
Sorry. I was here anyway, I just didn't realise.
You had to get your tissue.
There's some little sod upstairs running around. Bang, bang, bang on the floor.
I'm vaporising.
I can't. He's on the roof.
Yeah, don't worry. It'll only be... don't vaporise him.
Shut up, you.
Just send him through time.
Just a little vaporise.
I'll send him into a...
It's like another thing here when we're talking about the technology. He's writing. You know, he's handwriting something.
Yes. Him and Sisko have always been very much the same in that, because I think even in some of the later episodes of Deep Space Nine, when Sisko's cooking at his father's restaurant, he's still using all the old tools and all the old cooking instruments. He's not using any of the up-to-date stuff. Mm. He likes the whole hands-on thing and doing it as it should be done.
The only thing, though, is I would have thought that in this sort of time, using paper would never impact on the planet, because you'd just replicate paper. Or the manufacturer would just replicate paper.
Yeah. But he has got some technology, because like when Sisko appears, he calls Starfleet.
Yeah.
So he's obviously got some sort of communicator.
Oh, yeah. Space telephone.
Yeah.
I love the fact that Sisko has appeared and there's this fully grown man, totally different, but just by looking at his face, he could recognise that that was his son.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, he's obviously been down the gym as well, because Cyric Lofton was quite a slim guy. And Tony Todd's a, you know, he's a big guy, so he's obviously, yeah. Yeah, Jake's obviously been down the gym in the last few years as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His wife's Bajoran, of course.
Yeah. So you assume that they're probably living on Bajor?
See, there's his books.
The thing for Sisko is that every time he appears, it's only a couple of seconds have passed.
To Sisko, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting caught up in the scene, sorry. And I was supposed to be commentating, but I've just
got... We were doing that. We were watching The Offspring. It's like, shut up, I'm watching it.
I love the covers on these books.
They may be books, but look at the covers. They have got technology in them. They're glowing.
Yeah.
Because it'd be like an e-book.
Yes, it is, Tony Todd.
The pain.
Yes, Mares, this is Tony Todd, yeah.
Yeah, they just put latex on him for later. But yeah, I should imagine them would be like a future version of a Kindle or something like that.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Tony Todd is just brilliant in this.
It's when he starts saying, I shouldn't have given up trying to find you. And
yeah.
And you can just see the pain on his face and his eyes. It's incredible.
Yeah. And as soon as you can see that pain, you try and relate it to yourself and what you'd do in that situation.
And that's the thing, and Sisko's just so elated to see that he's actually lived a life, he's got a wife, he's got like a career that's been going.
Yeah, he wants to know if there's any grandchildren, yeah.
Yeah, he's just pleased to see that he's doing well, and he's gone.
He's gone, just like...
Oh, dear.
It's like when he hands in the book and he says, you did it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that's just a proud of dad, period.
Yeah.
But it's good that he's got that link to him, though, be it on Deep Space Nine or wherever he is. Sisko always appears near Jake.
Yeah, you see, he's attached to him, isn't he?
You imagine it if he only appeared where that space in time where the accident happened. Because he could appear 5 years afterwards and just materialise in space.
Yeah. Fortunately, he was tied to Jake, so he followed him round.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally.
They wish he'd been attached to the netball team that were currently on the ship at that time.
Guys, just a reminder. I know that we're enjoying watching an episode, but please...
Give us your money.
Yeah, head on over to justgiving.com/teams/trekmeetpodathon. We're coming to nearly 0 hour, so please... Just give what you can. It's all appreciated.
84%. We're nearly there. I might even change my bet.
What about these future uniforms? A lot of people absolutely hate them.
They just seem to change the com badge, and if the colour was at the top, it's now at the bottom, and if it was at the bottom, it's now at the top.
They just swap them around every so often, and you know they do redesign the com badges. You can actually buy those com badges. I've seen them on eBay.
There's been about 12 different com badges, and that one, yeah. Uniform I don't like too much because it just seems to be one colour now with the band going across. Whereas I like when it was actually segregated, when you had a different coloured bottom to a different coloured top.
Yes.
I just wanted to comment as well. I've just had a look on Twitter and seen Emma's picture that she decided to tweet of their setup as their real-time reviewing along with us. So thank you everybody who is joining us for this real time.
Yeah, they've got a laptop and an iPad sat there with their dog Pixel having a look out the window.
Honestly, the aging makeup that they have on all of the actors in this episode is fantastic.
Yeah.
Even Nog.
who's already made up, mm-hmm. but they just made yeah. them up to look old. So
yeah, it's very well.
Emma, a few wrinkles, and I don't know. I've got Emma on Twitter. Emma, add me on Twitter.
I loved Dax's hair there. It was very granny hair.
Yeah. It just shows as well how good an actor Tony, I know we're saying how awesome he is, but you know, he plays this part so well, but yet he plays Kern, who is a very, very, very different character, obviously, and he plays them both so well.
Yeah. There's a time paradox here as well, if you think about it, because Jadzia shouldn't be there.
Yeah, well, I guess the course of the future could change, couldn't it? One small action, the apparent death of Sisko could have changed a whole load of things so she didn't die. But yes, obviously, we knew that. Just we know that Jadzia does die later.
Cardassian regime, didn't he? So.
May I just say, I don't understand. Looking at Julian and Dax, how much they've aged, I can't understand why Nog has aged as badly as well, when Nog's meant to be about 25, 30 years younger than them.
Yeah, but we don't know how long Ferengi lived there. We don't know. We don't really know their life expectancy.
Yeah, it's never been established, has it?
No, because Klingons can be up to. I mean, Vulcans around 250. Klingons around about 200. 150 to 200. Humans up to around about 150. So, you know, maybe Ferengi are only about 70 or 80 or something.
I always love the scenes where they're in, like, the realms of the prophets.
Yes. Because it looks. Just like the Realms of the Prophet, or like where Picard Q takes was. Picard in Tapestry, yeah. Just the white space is all I can call it.
I always love these scenes.
But this scene again, it's Sisko is just being the dad. You know, what about them kids? You know, what about
and
your wife?
And he plays it well.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is very reminiscent of a prophet thing, isn't it? When he's speaking to the worm, my lady.
Mm. Yeah.
Catch up.
Oh, sorry.
How many have you had?
Nine.
Okay.
Nine. He's getting ready to do his extra piece afterwards.
I am. I want us to hit target. We need to hit target.
Are you going to change your bet then, Paul, if we hit target rather than 1,700? Let's not be too greedy. If we hit target, 1,500.
If we hit target, I will stay on and I will have a live version of Race for Impact.
Okay.
And what are you going to talk about? You've got to sell it, Paul.
Anybody wants to talk about in the forum. And if they think of three, four different subjects, I will address each of them individually.
Ooh.
If that doesn't work, I'll run up and down deck 5 in the nerdy.
Oh no, please don't do that.
You do that anyway. And here, no, that's this
on deck 7.
Anyway, this emotional scene that we're seeing right here, where literally Tony Todd's portrayal of Jake, he didn't want to let go of Ben. And Sisko was literally just begging him to please just get on with your life.
Yeah.
Stop chasing
me. Don't waste your whole life.
Because it turns out that he wasn't with his wife anymore by this point, was he?
No, she'd left him by this point. I mean, he'd obviously become completely obsessed with this.
Getting his dad back.
To the exclusion of everything else, and, you know, she'd left him.
I don't think I could. I think I'd be the same as Jake in this situation. I would never give up. Doesn't matter what it costs, I would
never give up, never surrender.
I don't know that song.
No, it's from Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
Sorry.
You should do a review on that.
It was something Matt and I, Matt Hansen and I were talking about that on Twitter the other day when he mentioned Galaxy Quest. And I says, oh yeah, I might put that on a supplemental. I says, maybe it'd be a Christmas special. And he says, well, no, do it as an April Fool. So I might do a supplemental review on Galaxy Quest because all the Trekkies love it because it just takes such a swipe at Trekkies.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Like the captain that everyone hates.
Yes. And all these nerds are coming up to me. In that episode when this happened, he's like, look, it's just a TV show.
Get a life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we might have to do a review of that. I do like Galaxy Quest. We can sort of get away with it.
What's his face in there of Home Improvement, hasn't it?
Yes, Tim Allen. Yes.
I like him. He was in The Santa Claus and The Santa Claus 2 and The Santa Claus 3.
Okay, I love he's him also as the voice Tim of, the Tall Man Taylor. And
he's also the voice of Buzz Lightyear.
But honestly, and I love the Santa Claus 1. Santa Claus 2 was okay. Santa Claus 3 was god awful.
Was he Buzz Lightyear, though?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a voice of Buzz Lightyear.
Oh, wow! It's that's
Tom Hanks, who was
Woody. Yeah.
Hanks was Woody.
Yeah.
That should be my name.
And Tim Allen is Buzz Lightyear.
Oh, don't, Paul. Honestly. Somewhere in the world, it's not past watershed.
Well, it's not in Australia, because it's, you know, it's like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning there, isn't it? So, yeah.
But you could say it's 4 or 5 o'clock at night still, because they're out clubbing, so it's fine. Yeah. Check it out, check it out.
Jesus Christ.
So this is a really sad thing as well. He's crying.
Yeah, this is really sad, yeah. He just gives her his book.
But the emotion is, it's not... It could be a home video. It's not like a... It really portrays it well.
That's the thing.
And he plays it well.
And because what he's realised is that it's him that his dad is actually tethered to.
Yes.
So he's going to commit suicide to try and cut that tether free.
Yeah, so he'll be sent back through time to the point of the accident.
In theory.
He spent his entire life, though, hasn't he, studying this and became an expert on trying to retrieve him.
Yeah, but also, I would have thought he's lived his life to the point he's tried every other option. By the time that you get to this sort of age in life, he's willing to give anything a go. It's the last shot.
Yeah, it's the last shot of a desperate man, isn't it?
If you were told that, if you had worked out that on your death, you'll be thrown back in time to the point that it happened.
And then the whole of that history wouldn't have happened, yeah.
Yeah, but you weren't entirely sure. Surely you would live your life out until you die and then just get sent back, because it's not going to make a diddly shit difference.
No. There's
a timing.
He needed Cisco to be there.
He needs him to be there, because...
He says something,
because it every so many years, whatever it is builds up and draws Cisco to him, and it's when Cisco's there, when he says, like, when the string is at its most taut, that's when he needs to cut the link, and he will be flung back in time to the point of the accident. Right. He can't just do it at any time. But obviously he's getting quite old at this point, so he can't leave it any longer. He can't wait until the next time this happens, because chances are he'll be dead, so he has to do it now.
One thing that I love about this episode, the music for me is so reminiscent of The Inner Light.
Yes.
And it strikes them same chords that I get when I'm watching The Inner Light.
Yeah. But he's taking such a big risk, because he thinks that that is what's going to happen. And that he can sever the link when Cisco appears again and get thrown back and everything be okay. But on the flip side of it, Cisco's going to turn up. He's going to top himself, and Cisco's going to see his son die in front of him, and nothing possibly happen.
Well, he's already started to top himself. He started that at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. When he was injecting himself.
Yeah. So this is all part of the plan. What he injected himself at the beginning, he knew it would affect round about now.
Mm-hmm. Because by this point, he's got it down to pretty much a science of when Cisco was going to appear next.
He can predict it exactly.
I mean, this is a massively powerful scene.
Yeah.
Which is why we're all quiet.
Yeah. He's just told Cisco to read the dedication.
To my father.
And he's crying again.
But even now, Cisco is like, you know, the dad. No.
Despite he's facing this old man. He's still talking to him like the same Jake that he ever knew.
It's through the lighting effect. Sorry, Wayne.
I've got real goosebumps at this scene.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant scene.
It's stunning. And now Sisko's just discovered
what he's been doing.
There you go. And it just being out in the engine room,
mm-hmm.
when he knows what's gone on because he's lived it.
Mm-hmm.
Jake doesn't know anything of what he's just lived. So the bit like the hook that happens, and you know, that means a lot to Sisko because Sisko knows what future Jake did, so to speak, or alternate timeline Jake.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's that hug means an awful lot more to Sisko than it does to Jake. Jake just thinks he's hugging him because, oh, they've just missed an energy discharge. But Sisko's hugging him for a completely different reason.
Cole, do you always skip the foreplay?
Yeah, it saves time. Yeah, you always want to get to dessert, don't you?
Enjoy the ride. Okay, Jake's just died. He's dodged.
And of course, Jake's completely oblivious to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But still playing everything through his mind.
Yeah.
Once again, a situation where a captain has really... his experience...
Something completely different, yeah.
Yeah, experienced something completely different. Another slight callback to the Inner Light. Obviously, it's not for the same sort of period of time, but just as emotionally impactful. And I love the fact that we just finish on that hug. It just encapsulates what that entire episode was about. It was... There was no side plot. There was no B plot. That's it. And that was just
You don't
stunning.
Need any B plots in that episode
Intense
at all.
Intense episode. And quite a lot of people have... it's brought up quite a lot of emotion on the forum as well.
Right. Do we just skip the score and all give it a 10 and then go and have a little cry?
Plan.
I mean, it's a 10. That's it. There were other episodes which have got great action and you know and great storylines and but in terms of what Star Trek's really about for me, which is about human relationships, mm-hmm. there is probably no better Trek story about a human relationship than that mm-hmm. for me. Absolutely fantastic episode 10.
As Michael just said, it's an 11. It just surpasses any expectations that you can have for an episode. You can't fault it in any way. It strikes every emotional chord. It's a beautiful episode.
I'd like to be able to add up how many Star Trek episodes have actually brought a tear to my eye.
What would you score this, Paul? Because you're always very...
I'm very harsh with my scoring. But I'm going to go with a 10. I really did think this just hit every single... It doesn't matter if you're a Trekkie or if you're not a Trekkie. You could watch this episode. You could understand
you can understand the storyline and the emotion in it. You can get it.
And it is a really, really emotional episode. The actors were superb in what they did with it. And I just think it's fantastic. And,
I wonder how many times in that review we said emotional and superb acting.
Oh, Christ, I hope somebody...
Well, I'm not getting it. Like, when I went to prizes, I missed it 12 times. Have I done
so
it again?
Colin, say it again. Close one more.
I thought it would be
No, don't worry. Colin, closing thoughts?
For me, it's a 10, definitely. Powerful episode, full of deepful meaning, expertly shows the relationship between father and son. You can take the Star Trek out of it, and it still works.
Yeah. There's not really much Star Trek in it. Not really.
No.
There's a spaceship, and he gets zapped away by some anomaly. That's it.
That's it, yeah. It doesn't have to be Star Trek. It's basically an episode about relationships of father and son and the lengths that people will go to for that relationship. That's what that episode is.
Yeah.
And Jake is prepared to go as far as he has to, even to end in his own life. And that's the power of that episode, pure and simple. So, yeah, for me, it's definitely a 10. And I'm, as you know, DS9 is not my favourite. A lot of people know that. But I just love all Star Trek. I don't have a favourite. And when you get episodes like these come along that make you sit up and you just we're supposed to be doing a commentary on it, but we was going quiet.
That's because we're watching it, because it's just, yeah, you're just like,
it's,
yeah,
such a good episode.
Shut up, I'm watching it.
Yeah. And it's just one of them episodes. And Star Trek has so many episodes, which is why I like all Star Trek. And it just epitomises, you get a good script with good actors and well directed, and you get something like that that you could watch time and time and time again.
And never get sick of it.
Yeah, and it would still tug at you.
Yeah.
It really would. And you can't get enough words that describe and do this episode as justice. Along with Inner Light, these are epitomes of perfect TV. Really, yeah. Really is.
Inner Light's another one. You can take the Star Trek out. Mm-hmm. It still works.
Oh, yeah. Forget Star Trek. TV.
Yeah. Guardian on the Edge of Forever. It's another one. You can take the Star Trek out and it still works. There's loads of episodes like that in Star Trek. And they all play on emotional relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I just can't really do justice to this episode, but still, we have to try. So, no.
Yeah.
Todd going to Star Trek London.
Don't know, Paul.
That'd be nice.
I nearly met him once. He was meant to be going to the Smallville convention that I went to, but he had to cancel at the last minute. Yeah, he was in Smallville as well.
Oh. So. It's probably good thing he didn't go, because Tom would have probably insulted him and got killed.
Yeah.
I never really watched that much of Smallville.
I was a huge Smallville fan. Huge Smallville fan.
No, I never watched
it. You've got the ball up,
yeah. I watched much of it.
Let's see. No, I'm just a big softie. There are so many TV programs that just make me bawl my eyes out. And that's had me going a few times. So.
It's because you had a dad.
Honestly, before I was a dad, now I'm even worse.
He's a big ball of fur.
Paul, you've already called me portly once today, you bastard. less of the size.
But I was saying that you'd make a good admiral because of being...
Yeah, because I'm a fat fuck, I'm make a good admiral. I can tell
we're in hour 24.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll cuddle you. I have before.
Still. Anyway, let's keep talking about it. And, because we are in 0 hour.
Dun, dun, dun.
We're 45 minutes away, people. We've reached hour 24. I tell you what, we're not going to go for a musical break, but you might as well just play Rick's tune that he done for it. Otherwise, it'd be a shame.
It would be a shame not to play that, wouldn't it? Let's go for hour 24.
I could put that straight back on now. I could. I'm watching all again.
Oh, yeah. Couldn't we all?